Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let me ask you a question. How does your favorite song make you feel? Music affects and changes people's lives. It invokes memories. The first gig you went to, the first record you bought, that song from your school days, or the song you danced to at your wedding, or even your first kiss. It gets you through the worst times and the best of times. Music has always played an important part in my life. First and foremost, I'm a music fan, but I've been lucky enough to have interviewed some of the biggest names in music, combining my career with my passion. Each week, I chat to some of my favourite artists to talk about the tracks of their lives and more. I'm Kylie Olsen, and this is Music and Me. Ask anyone about this guy, and they will without a doubt say, all right, okay, change that somewhat. Ask any woman about this guy, and they will say, what? The one with the lovely shiny hair and the luscious lips and the black and white video from the 90s. However, if you're into music, and if you're listening to this podcast, and I guess you are, then you will know that Nuno Bettencourt is one of the most underrated guitarists out there. He was put in front of our radar in the 90s with his band Extreme, and the ballad More Than Words blew them up big time. However, if you dig a little bit deeper, you'd soon realise that this wasn't a true reflection of the band, who were actually quite heavy. Still playing with Extreme, and he's also Rihanna's musical director, Nuno Bettencourt proves there's so much more to him than that song.
What was the first song you bought? Have a think.
The first song I bought was a 45 of Gary Numan's Cars.
Oh, really?
Yes. Being the youngest of 10 kids, you have a lot of albums you don't have to buy. So the physically purchased Gary Numan. Don't know why, I actually always love that track. I still do. But it's kind of, there's no guitar in there. Yeah, it's interesting. Here am I going.
I heard that you didn't start off as a guitarist, so you started off as a drummer.
You heard correct. Who told you that?
My little spy.
That wiki guy?
Yeah. Actually, it was a friend of mine that told me that.
Oh, yeah. No, I was obsessed with drums, yeah. It was drums.
Why? Why the drums?
Because it's the most fun instrument in rock and roll, period. I still prefer to play drums over guitar. Still. Any chance, every time people ask me to jam or do and come and play up songs, I'm just like, if you let me play drums, I'll play the whole night.
Have you ever appeared on a track?
Extreme?
Did you play on some Extreme? Yeah, basically, have you ever drummed on a track that's made it onto a record?
No, I have never drummed on many tracks.
You haven't?
No.
He says, shaking his head, yes.
No.
No?
That was for your eyes only. You just dubbed me in. No, but, you know. I used to write all the Extreme stuff on drums first anyway, so a lot of it came from there.
Not many people do that. You don't normally write songs on drums.
I know, but sometimes I would write over a groove, especially if the band is a bit funkier at times like we are, so the groove was always important.
So you've never made it onto a track, like someone, because you've played with some fantastic people.
Yes, I have.
But you've never managed to...
On album.
To squeeze yourself on as a drummer?
No, not on album. You know, there's some rumors out there on an Extreme album you might hear me somewhere here and there, but they're just rumors. But no, I mean, live, of course. I've jumped up and played, with people that they don't know that I'm doing. I just kick off the drummer. Like recently I was in Asia, and I don't know if you know who Mr. Zach Wilde is, but
yes, I do.
He was out in the crowd doing his thing and doing a little Black Sabbath tune, and I just went up to the drummer and tapped him and kicked him off the kit, and Zach had no idea it was that good. He had no idea by the time he came back, and he was supposed to end the song with the drummer, and he looked up at me and he was in shock. It was pretty funny, but that was fun.
And you played with Zach with your Generation X.
Yes.
Yeah. Was that what you were doing?
That was just what we were doing in Asia, yeah.
So what's that like, being in a super group of that?
It's hell. Who wants to hear that much guitar? I don't, and I'm a guitar player.
I do. I love it.
I would never go to that show. Are you kidding me?
Come on. So you got what? Steve Vai.
Yeah, it's Steve Vai, myself, Zach Wilde. There's this newer generation kid from a band called Animals as Leaders, Tosin Abasi is his name. Then we got the ever so regal Yngwie Malmsteen, who's it was interesting. But these sort of guitar things have been done in the past, G3s they called them, Steve Vai, Josh Randy, and I was asked a couple of times, but I never did it because I never, let's ask these guys what they think. I've never had instrumental albums out, so I thought nobody wants to hear me sing songs, but apparently they do. Apparently it works. It's actually probably a highlight for them because I get to interrupt all the getting paid by the note part of the evening.
So what was the track that made you pick up the guitar?
I'm not exactly sure, because I kind of had a brother. Well, kind of. He was my brother. That was an incredible guitar player, and still is an incredible guitar player, Mr. Louis Betancourt. And every time my friends or anybody hear him, they go, oh, I see where you stole everything from. So he was my first kind of idol, like, guitar hero, so to speak. You know, we got a bit of an age gap. I'm the youngest of 10 kids, but he was one of the older brothers. And I used to just follow him around everywhere, watch him, be in awe of him, and then I kind of wanted to be like him. And then it was Aerosmith and Zeppelin and Queen. Queen was a big one. So it was those guitar players that came, but he was the initial one that made me pick the thing up.
And did he give you lessons?
He tried. The reason I actually became I'm still working on a pretty half-decent guitar player is because he tried to teach me. I wanted to learn. And he would give me 2 or 3 chords a week, and then by the end of the week, he's supposed to see how I'm going, and I was terrible. I didn't practice, lazy. I was playing sports. I was just wanted to play football.
That's unusual for a musician to be a sportsman.
It was a sportsman that was trying to be a musician. That's why.
That's usual.
That's you. No, honestly, I was playing like football, meaning I guess soccer in the U.S., but I was obsessed with football because I wanted to play football for Portugal, for my country. Mm-hmm. That never happened. 3 knee surgeries later, but it was promising. So then I just, started playing and then started doing less sports after the injuries.
So we go from the drums, we go to the guitar.
No. Then we went to the bass.
Did you go to the bass?
Then we did a little bit of keyboards, then we ended the guitar, and I just finally gave in. Let's do a guitar. But that's why with Extreme, those guys love me, because I would just give them the song finished from top to bottom. They go, great, thanks for that, appreciate it.
And so your brother obviously, got you interested in playing the guitar. What did your parents think of you becoming a musician? Were they keen on that?
At that point, well, my dad played like 11 instruments. My mom sang a bit, so it wasn't even a surprise. There was just instruments everywhere. You almost didn't have a choice. It's not like anybody asked you to do it or forced you to do it. You just did it. You just picked it up. There was keyboards around. There was guitars. There were basses around. So you just kind of, everybody did it. It's one of those things with musical home. So it's the other stuff that you did was like, what? You want to do what? Yeah. You want to be a dentist? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
It's the opposite.
So as you grew up with so much music around you, what was the one artist that makes you think of home and your family?
The one...
Artist. Or song. Yeah.
Or song that made me... one of the, well, probably anything Beatles. would do, because as a most probably American families would, if they had any music in them at all, they would probably sing Christmas songs at Christmas time. We had the Beatles catalog, and we would just open it, and everybody played three or four guitars, and we would just sing Beatles all night, everything, all the whole catalog. So that was a big, that was more like the Bible of the whole thing. It's not, wasn't necessarily, it's hard to say it was an influence or it's something I remember. It was almost just what you grew up with. It was like having dinner. It was just normal, you know. But I think one of the, probably the first songs I learned on guitar was a Moody Blues song called Nights in White Satin.
I know that song.
And it was an easy one to learn on guitar, you know, acoustic guitar. So I learned that first. And that's the one where, you know, when I knew, wow, I played this song, you know, from front to back, I'm like, I might actually kiss a girl. This might actually work. I might actually get a date somewhere at some campfire or at somebody's... It didn't happen for me.
So that put the fire in your belly. You were like,
That did.
I could be smart here.
Yeah.
Pick up the guitar. I'm going to get the girls.
But instead, I didn't get the girls. And instead, I just learned more and more songs and got less of the girls and locked myself in my room for 18 hours a day and became a guitar player.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end.
And then More Than Words came out, and you got the girls.
What happened? They all came later. I mean, it was just shut up. But look, it was worth the wait. It was worth the wait.
What does that song mean to you now? All these years later, was it 20 odd, 25, 26, 27 years?
25, 26, something like that. You're right. What does it mean? You know, it's interesting. You know, doing press earlier today, that's a good way to ask the question. You're probably one of the few who've asked it, what does it mean to you? Because the question, which is bizarre, that's asked the exact same way, is they go More Than Words. So it's like the presidential debate, the way they ask it. More Than Words, blessing or a curse?
Really?
Yeah. That's, everybody says, is a blessing or a curse? And I say, okay, that's interesting, because I know what they mean. I know.
Like an albatross?
I'm not offended. Meaning, like, it's like, is it? I think people think that, you know, when I ask them why, they think it's, oh, it's not really you guys. You know, you're a rock band, and I'm like, no. And I say, you're completely wrong. I mean, I wrote the song. We wrote the song. It's on the album for a reason. It wasn't because we were embarrassed of it or ashamed of it or scared of it. And but the interesting thing about Mother Words, it's written as simplistic and as easily as the other ones were written. It was written on a porch, and it took about 10 minutes, and it was done, and it went on an album. And what makes it a hit is that it gets released. If it never gets released as a single, it's not a hit, correct?
Yeah.
And it's on the album. So for it to become a hit, somebody has to, the audience has to make that happen. The record company has to release. The record company did not want to release it. They said to me, they looked me in the eye and they said, it's not a hit. Seriously.
That's why you got to love record labels, right?
Yeah, I'm like, that's who's, your whole career is in their hands. And my manager said, it's not a hit. And when I think back, I kind of understand why. If you listen to that song, and that thing's going to come out in 90, was it 90?
Yeah.
There was no acoustic music on the radio.
No.
Zero.
And it's a very, it's a very stripped back song, isn't it?
Yeah, it's stripped back, and not only that, there was no format on the radio. Like all the rock bands or metal bands at the time had these big power ballads with big drums, cannons, and it was, you know, and they were looking at us like, what do you want me to do with this thing? There's two guys sitting on stools sitting a song. And by the way, the song really doesn't have... here comes the big sing-along hook. It was just two voices meandering. Nobody knew what the chorus was. Nobody was, what are we supposed to sing? What does everybody sing? So so when we started playing, everybody sang everything. Because there was never like, okay, here's the big sing-along. So it was an odd song. I can imagine a scary song for them to go like, yeah, we're going to put all this money into it and it's going to be a hit. They didn't know what to do with it. This is pre-MTV Unplugged. So, you know. Yeah, so we brought it back.
This is Kylie Olsen, and you're listening to Music and Me. Coming up, we're going to be continuing my conversation with Nuno Bettencourt and find out what this is all about.
Because this was at the height of extreme. The last thing you want to do is crash a wedding where they're like having the one, the moment that can't be repeated, and this guy goes, hey, I'm over here.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
More than words is all you have to do to make it real.
So what does it mean to you then now?
Look, the blessing of the curse, question against answers. I go, we write it, we put it on the album, it's a single, it goes to number one worldwide, it turns everybody else on to the rock stuff, we do festivals, I'm here today with you still, we're, you know, five albums later, whatever it is, and, you know, got a decent house, all that stuff, or it's not a hit. The curse side, and I'm working at Burger King serving you fries, you know, whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So for me as a musician, when you're in a rehearsal space, any band that started out would dream, give any body part, anything to have any song of theirs connect to anyone like that song did.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's, you know, Enter Sandman by Metallica. You know that what they feel, that it connects with an audience like that.
So has it changed what it means to you, though, over the years? Like, well, I mean, I don't know. Was it about anyone in particular? Or was it about a certain period in time? And so when you performed that song in the beginning, you had those emotions.
We cry, yeah.
And then now it's kind of, it probably has changed.
No,
somewhat.
You know what?
No?
It was actually a very simple, I would love to have some great story about this special person that it was about.
And, no.
But it was actually, it was about relationships that we were in that, of the I love you term.
Mm.
People were throwing it out like confetti. Yeah. You know, it's like I love you. I love my dog. I love, you know, and we were just so that we, you know, it was all these, I would see like relationships with my older brothers and sisters where you would see them tell each other I love you, but then they would yell at each other for the 99% of the rest of the day and treat each other like shit. And I'm like, it doesn't mean anything if you say anything. You got to show it. You got to express it. It's about who you are. And I don't want to get, everybody knows this. It's actually pretty clear what you have to do. Not that everybody does it, but so it was that simple.
It's showing it rather than saying it. Words are empty, aren't they? If you do.
Yeah, you know.
Indeed. So okay.
I wish it was deeper. It isn't much.
Well,
deeper.
I think that's quite good. I think that's quite deep.
It's the basics. It's the fundamentals that we, you know, relationships.
Exactly. Involved. So did you notice a difference in the ladies after that?
There were more of them, for sure. I mean, look.
It's the music video. I think that helped. I remember watching it as a kid and going, "Holy crap."
Holy crap, look at that guy's guitar skills. Look at his finger pinking.
I remember thinking I loved your hair. I'm getting creepy but now, no, I'm actually, sorry.
No, you're not, because that was the most asked question in any interview by guys or girls. It was like,
what do you use?
What conditioner are you using?
No.
And I'd be like, I just don't blow dry my hair.
Naturel, darling.
Yeah. But that helped. I'm surprised that I didn't get approached to do any hair commercials or any like, you know, like Head and Shoulders or something.
Totally missed a trick there.
Yeah, bad management. I should have definitely been doing a whole campaign.
My God. But you see, Extreme broke the UK before you broke America, didn't you?
We didn't break with More Than Words here.
No, it was
Get the Funk Out, correct.
Exactly. Why do you think that was?
Thank God. I don't know. I think we had a problem with Get the Funk Out in the U.S. on radio.
Because it sounded like a swear.
Yes. Yeah. We have the whole Bible Belt issue to deal with, and people were calling in complaining, and I think they pulled it. They had to pull it because everybody thought we were saying, get the fuck out. And then I remember telling Sebastian that story, so he wrote a story, Skid Row wrote a song, Get the Fuck Out, because I told him that story. And, but let's go back to Get the Fuck Out. Yeah, it broke here, and it was amazing, because when we came here, I think we were more respected as musicians, players, rock band, and then More Than Words was just a follow-up to that. And it's still, I think it went to number 2 here, because I, goddamn Bryan Adams song.
What was it? Anything I'll Do, I'll
the
Do
Robin
for
Hood,
Love.
The Robin Hood
anything
track.
Anything I'll Do, I'll Do for Love, yeah. Is it that one?
Is it Everything I do, yeah.
Yeah.
And and then we ended up touring with him in the UK, and I bitched at him for months about that. Like, thanks for not letting us go to #1 in the UK. It happened everywhere else but here. I think.
Yeah. Damn.
But you know what? Brian. The cool thing about that song is it's become a bit of a standard in the in I don't know about here, but in America, like in the karaoke world, in the wedding world.
Yeah.
Those times not too long ago, we were or even at that period, we'd be on tour. And I'd come down a hotel like this, come down at 3 p.m. for breakfast and come downstairs. And I'd be walking by this exact hall, except it'd be like kind of like those little, what do you call it, function halls.
Yeah.
And then you would hear, you would see a sign that said groom, bride and groom. And the doors were shut, but you'd hear something familiar. And I'd be like, wow, what's going on here? And I'd open the door just a bit, and there would be the bride and groom dancing to More Than Words. And it was just like, I would just... Should I go in?
Yes.
No, I would just close the door and go, my work is done here. And I would just keep walking.
That would have been so funny if
it would have been amazing. It would have been amazing.
The wedding,
but I didn't want to
cake.
Take away from like their like, oh wow, it's, you know, because this was at the height of extreme. The last thing you want to do is crash a wedding where they're like having the moment that can't be repeated, and this guy goes, hey, I'm over here. And I'm the original guy who's saying that. And. Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, I wish I could go back. I'd do it now. I'd be a fuck 'em. I'd do it.
Can you remember what you were listening to during that period in your life?
During
Porno Graffiti.
Wow,
what were you listening?
That's a good question. You know, when I know when I was writing a lot. I remember when I was writing, I didn't listen to a lot of music on purpose.
Hmm.
But I think I was listening to a lot of Aerosmith at that time. Going through the Aerosmith catalog and quite a bit of Queen, I think.
You liked quite a lot of the British bands, didn't you? So you mentioned Queen,
yeah,
Zeppelin. Aerosmith's one of yours from Boston.
Yeah, from Boston. But yeah, look, Zeppelin, you know, I didn't think of it that way, you know, British or American, but to me, it's the greatest rock band for me is always going to be Zeppelin. As far as rock goes, and the greatest pop band was always the Beatles. Everybody else falls somewhere in the middle. They're like the pages of the Bible for me. You know what I mean? I don't even have to say who the greatest rock band was. It's just, that's them to me.
Yeah, I get that, because they're mine too.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's just because of everything they've done, the catalog, the stuff that they did through the years. And it's the same thing with the Beatles for the pop side. Obviously, there's amazing, the Queens and Van Halen's for me, and Aerosmith, and Radiohead, and they're all freaking British bands. What am I doing?
What are you doing? You need to get over here.
They're good songwriters, you know. You use people.
What's your favorite Zeppelin song?
Song? You can't ask me that.
I know. It's a hard one, isn't it?
You know, one of them that always, and this is going to suck because I wrote More Than Words, but now I can see where it's all coming full circle. Going to California was always one of my favorite tracks. I remember when I was young and I heard that, it really affected me. It was ingrained, you know, kind of burnt an image in me. And I still hear it now, and I still get that same feeling when I hear it.
Spend my days with a woman unkind, smoke myself and drink all my wine.
But we were talking about this on the bus a few days ago. We were in Germany, and it was Gary's birthday yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, yesterday. The day before was 2 days before that was Pat's. And all the other guys have their birthdays in 1 week. Paul, Pat, and Gary.
It's expensive for you.
Nah.
It's a present.
When you're in Troy, you don't buy anybody. I ain't got time to go shopping, you know? Just a little birthday cake, sing a song. But we were breaking down all these bands that we've loved and how we're still playing them in the dressing room now, and we still feel the exact same way. Whether it's the Police, whether it's Van Halen, whether it's Aerosmith, whether it's Queen. The greatest band, Zeppelin, they don't age like that. They still make you feel, give you still the goosebumps in certain parts that you hear, and It's incredible how it doesn't change. You would think you'd be over it by now.
Not great music.
No.
It
stays.
Lasts.
It stays, yeah.
It definitely
shelf
does.
Life. It's a Twinkie. Yeah. It's like a Twinkie.
A Twinkie? Do they last forever?
You should get the Twinkie Awards. Should be a new award show called the Twinkie. We bronze the Twinkie, an actual Twinkie.
Well, there you go.
Let's start it. I'll host it with you. Let's do it.
Let's do it, totally.
Twinkie Awards.
The Twinkie Awards.
Yeah. If I see you guys doing the Twinkie Awards next year and I'm not fucking part of this, I will
You're
sue.
You're going to sue us, aren't
I'll
you?
Do what every American does, right to
you'll,
sue.
You'll sue. Yeah. Oh, my God. So what are you listening to at the moment?
What am I listening to at the moment? I've been writing again a lot. We're doing a new album. And I'm producing three other albums, three other young artists, because I started this multimedia company last year called Atlantis Entertainment, signed three young artists that I'm kind of developing from the ground up, and all I've been doing is producing and writing these records with them. But music-wise, not so much in the new, a little Ed Sheeran, new
okay.
album, a little Ed Sheeran. As far as new, sometimes I don't know if it's newer stuff, but yeah, I've been going back a little bit. I haven't listened to Van Halen a long time, and I've been doing it lately.
Have you? What?
It's like
what
a confession.
Van Halen,
I'm sorry.
Come on,
give
me a Van Halen.
Father, for Heston. The Fair Warning album was the album that changed the way my guitar song, the way I played. It was their least successful album, but it was it's that's the album that kind of messed me up.
At night I walk this stinking street past the crazies on my block, and I see the same old faces and I hear that same old talk.
You say you're starting to produce some new bands. Why have you wanted to do that?
I don't know. I should just be sitting in a pool somewhere, retired.
Yeah.
I don't know why I wouldn't want to go through that.
We don't want you to retire.
No, but it's there. It's just because we started this company, and I've been wanting to do that for a while. I want to tour a little bit less. Not that we've been doing a lot.
Do you like touring then, or do you find?
I've always loved touring, but you know what? It being the old man that I am now, I'd like to be home a little bit more. It's one of those things. It's not just me. I remember. And I thought we were bad by saying, man, can we just keep it like 2 months, 3 months at a time?
At a time, see, that's intense.
That's long.
That is extremely
long. But we used to do 18 months, 6-8 months at a time, take a week off. That's what we used to do way back when, burn out like that. But I remember we did a festival not too long ago with Pearl Jam was there, and I was talking to Eddie Vedder. I was like, so how much more you got to go? Oh, we're going home tomorrow. I'm like, oh, your tour's over? You've been out for a long time? Nah, we did a week, and now we're going home.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Like a week off, week on, week off.
Yeah.
I could relate to that.
So, because you work with Rihanna as well.
Yeah, and that took it back to fucking touring.
Yeah.
Like, long touring.
Yeah.
These kids, these Rihanna kids.
And what's she like
Five
to work
tours.
With?
She's great. She's great. She's only slapped me at least 2-3 times. And because I wouldn't smoke weed with her. But besides that, no, those are all lies. She's amazing. Great experience. She never saw one diva moment out of her. She was always super sweet. Always had a good relationship with her. I, became her MD, her musical director. So I had to, work closely with her a lot. And she was pretty basic stuff, like me and you right now.
Yeah.
Pretty basic.
Yeah, sure.
She seemed very unaffected. You know, she built her own world. She's in her own world in there. And
did you wonder how your music would fit into
I wasn't laughing at that. I was laughing at the dirty version of what you just said, but keep going.
What was the dirty version?
No,
what did I say?
No.
Did you wonder
how? Did you wonder how you would fit into
You're such a dirty
mind. I do wonder. I did wonder for many years. No. She.
Oh, what? Would you
know,
like?
You know what? No.
What are you saying?
No.
What are you revealing?
Yeah, no. The truth is, like, I'll answer your question. When I got the call to do it from a friend of mine who was her music director, said, first thing I said was, why? Why would you want me to perform with this girl? There is no guitar.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
And he said, yeah, that's why she wants you to do it. She saw some clips of you and she thinks you're cool and likes your hair in that video, that one video. And
and she wants to ask you what shampoo and conditioner you use. Yeah.
But she... she wanted the show, the live show, to be a bit more rock and roll, a little bit heavier. And so I said, so I get to take her songs and ruin all of them the way I want. They go, all yours.
Wow.
Same rig, play them harder, play them heavier. And I remember it was great. It was fun to take all these great songs out because I was a fan.
Oh, were you?
I was. You know, okay. I actually knew all her stuff, you know, and I thought, okay, cool. So to take some of these like hits like Umbrella and Crazy Songs and make them add power chords and she loved it. In live, it was so much more aggressive. Yeah. We're not singing, so.
Yeah. So what was the one, if there was one track, or you could only take one track to listen to for the rest of your life, what would it be?
It would be More Than Words. So I could die listening to a song that I know would kill me. The song itself would kill me if I have to play it one more fucking time.
I say yes.
Yeah. What would it be? One song. I can only listen to one song.
You can only listen to one song forever. That's it.
It would be Bed's Too Big Without You by The Police. And on repeat. I think I could do that one.
Why?
I don't know. I just never get sick of that song. Because it'd have to be a song we can get sick of, right?
Yeah.
It's not my favorite. Is that what you're asking? Like, what my favorite song
would
be?
No, I'm just... I'm asking you that. And that's a good answer, really.
Yeah. And I thought if I was listening to this one song and that's all I had, there's a pretty good chance I'm by myself, you know, on an island somewhere where the world has ended and I'm the only one left, and that's the only song left. So maybe The Bed's Too Big Without You, because I would be by myself. It's almost sad. I'm almost going to start crying now.
Don't cry.
Okay, I won't.
Well, that's it for Music and Me. Nuno Bettencourt, what a dude. I tell you what, ladies, he's still quite hot as well. Sorry, I just couldn't help myself. I kept it professional. I did indeed. Now, if you like the show, get in touch, tell your mates about it. Let me know as well who you think I should get on the show. And you can do that by going on Twitter and Instagram at Kylie Olsen.
Music and Me is produced by The Podcast Works and OneSum Media.